All right, David Spinopterup here with Jonathan Harding, Ross Dunbar, and down the line, Stefan Bienkowski. Hey, guys, welcome back up to the Tribuna Weekly. Some interesting upsets this week in match day six, and we're going to be talking about two of them in depth before we get into our shout from the tribunas this week. So let's get started. First one, of course, was I think the biggest one, arguably, is Dortmund's loss in Leverkusen over the weekend. Leverkusen won 2-0. Chicharito scored again. He is once again on in his top form. Stefan, you seemed to be very critical of Dortmund in this game. What didn't you like about what they did, and did you expect something different than what happened?
I'm not sure what I was expecting from the match. They obviously had a very tiring encounter with Real Madrid earlier in the week in the Champions League, and that could certainly be used as a factor as to the manner in which Dortmund played, because I thought they didn't seem to have as much fight as Leverkusen. I think Leverkusen actually looked much more cohesive, even though Leverkusen also had a Champions League game. I just wasn't too sure. I thought this... I'm loath to jump to conclusions, and we're only 6 weeks into the new season, but I guess since Tuchel has been here for a whole season, I suppose I do have some justification for it. And I guess the voice at the back of my head tell me that this was another example of Thomas Tuchel being a little too smart for his own good in a big game.
In what way specifically? Because I think that's something that a lot of people felt. Why do you think he was too smart for his own good?
Well, I just thought the way he lined up at the start with a back five, he moved things around, and you know, playing. The whole system didn't seem to make much sense to me. I know it wasn't too different to the manner in which they have been playing this season, but it just seemed the general tone of the team didn't seem that up for the game against Leverkusen. From the very beginning, the very, very beginning, Leverkusen were in Dortmund's face, and they didn't really seem to do anything about it. And it seemed kind of similar to what we've seen last season. Now, I know Dortmund they beat Leverkusen twice last season, which we talked about in our predictions podcast, where I said Leverkusen had to do better against the big teams, and they obviously did this weekend. But you know, we said going into this season that Tuchel still hadn't figured out how to get the best of Bayern. We saw that in the Pokal final, the Super Cup final, going into the season, and of course the manner in which they couldn't beat Bayern last season. And there were other games as well. I'm thinking back to the draw with Schalke, and of course the two legs against Liverpool in the Europa League as well. Games they really should have won, in my opinion. And I think that perhaps the most notable thing is just the contrast to the way Jurgen Klopp's teams used to play. Now, I'm sure Dortmund fans aren't going to sit there and complain about the way Tuchel has conducted himself as the coach of Dortmund, which is absolutely fine. And he sure as hell gets, points. He's done remarkably well to pick up the points tally they did last season. But the way that Klopp's team used to really get stuck into people's faces in the big games, the games that they weren't expected to win, or even the really tight games, I'm not entirely sure I've seen that from Tuchel's teams in these select few big encounters. And I thought that was the case on Saturday against a Leverkusen team who really looked like they had something to prove and ultimately walked away with all 3 points.
Ross, you've been kind of reeling up your response here, so I'm going to let you off the line and say what you're going
to
say.
No, actually, to be fair, Stefan wasn't as harsh as I thought he was going to be there. I mean, I thought we were kind of lining up for a Trump-Clinton-esque thing going on here. But
you're definitely Trump. You are definitely Trump.
I think a lot of the points that Stefan made were actually quite fair. I thought Leverkusen outfought Dortmund. They seemed to have a little bit more fire in the belly. For me, I just thought Dortmund ran out of ideas, and I think that's a natural thing when you've got so many young players. I think this Dortmund team, given where they've been in the last 2 years, firstly with Klopp, obviously they were so poor in his last season. Tuchel had a really good year last year, well beyond their expectations. I mean, it was phenomenal. Mm. This year, I think that's kind of hindered them a little bit because everyone's expecting them to challenge Bayern. Mm. I don't really see it like that. I think you have to maybe take a step back and say, okay, this Dortmund team, without the money that Bayern have, without the resources, they're going to take a little bit more time. I get that they've signed players like André Schürrle, who was injured in that game. Mario Götze was on the bench, which is a bit of a surprise for me. Yeah. I thought that's the kind of player who would have been good in this game. But instead, Tuchel stuck with Pulisic and Dembele. Obviously, it's a great learning curve for these guys, but in that game, I would have probably preferred him to see him go from with the tried and trusted options. You know, like Götze, for example, is obviously who's played in these kind of games. His style of play would have been a little bit more suited to a team that's coming all at you, because in some way you have to get beyond those lines of the press. I mean, if you look at the analysis, Leverkusen were pressing with four guys.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a back four and Weigl's in front and you have like a kind of staggered four,
yeah,
it's really difficult for Weigl to get any room at all. So you can't go through him like you normally would.
Yeah, I felt that was probably the biggest issue. I mean, I agree with what's been said so far. I thought Dortmund were surprisingly disappointing. Leverkusen were surprisingly good. But I felt that the game hindered on Julian Weigl. You know, his inability to circulate the ball like he normally does was down to Leverkusen's press, but it was also disappointing to see that Dortmund didn't have a plan B when that happened. Obviously, changing the back five to the three as it was at the beginning with wing backs, and then to four, that didn't really work, and they couldn't really make the most of Weigl. I mean, Weigl, Socrates, I think, had the most touches in the game, or maybe even just at half time, but it was really extraordinary to see how hindered, almost disabled, Dortmund looked without Weigl as their conductor in midfield. And kind of suggests to me that A, Tuchel has a lot of work to do in making Dortmund more of a flexible side tactically, but also for everybody watching, it's kind of a blueprint for how do we stop this Borussia Dortmund side being so effective. Well, if you get at their conductor in midfield, it seems to choke them. So,
but you mentioned the flexibility. That's something that we've seen from Tuchel kind of throughout the season, that you know, if things aren't going well, he'll play Götze in behind the lines, or if they'll play Guerrero that far forward, or they'll play Dembele kind of in the middle a little bit. They've got different options. Bizarrely, they didn't really seem to have that on Saturday, which was quite surprising. I don't know whether, you know, maybe Schürrle is his plan B, someone who can drive at defenders, who can shoot from distance, that kind of thing. I think Bartra's absence was one thing that was a bit of a problem, because I don't think Ginter and Socrates together is necessarily a Champions League standard defensive pairing, but I think it's a learning curve.
We saw that on during midweek, though. I think Ginter had a rough... He did a right against Madrid, but you could tell he was out of his depth a bit, and I felt like there was more of that on the weekend at times. I mean, he's a good defender. He's at the right club, but sometimes the occasion looks like it's a bit too much for him. Mm-hmm. What interested me was, you're right, you know, this attacking foray that Dortmund have, they didn't really make the most of it. I was a bit disappointed with Dembele again. There were a couple of nice passes there, but it didn't look very much. And you talk about direct runners in Schürrle, for example. You know, Pulisic is basically one of the most direct players I've seen in recent years, and he was totally ineffective in this game. So I think the players were there. And Steph, to go back to the point you were making, you know, you referenced a couple of those games in the past about Tuchel not having it in big games. I almost dare to say that it's becoming a Borussia Dortmund thing, not necessarily a Thomas Tuchel thing, not to be able to get it done in big games. I mean, Klopp had a terrible record at getting it done in finals. I know that they won two championships, and there's an exception there, of course. I'm not trying to generalise, but the Liverpool game, that's more of a character issue than a tactical issue for me. I think a lot of these players just don't have the experience, as you mentioned, Ross, or don't have the character or the strength of will to take the grip of the game and say, hey, look, we're playing badly, but we're not going to throw this away.
Well, if you think Weigl in that game in England, I think that was his first trip to England with the football team, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So... yeah, I mean, it was a young team last year, and it's obviously a young team now with a lot of youth players coming through. But Jonathan, I wanted to ask you, how worried are you about Dortmund's ability to defend? Because they've let in a ton of goals, and obviously they fell behind twice in midweek, and they obviously allowed that early goal against
Set pieces remain an issue. I think that's something that frustrates most football fans when their side can't defend from set pieces, especially because they are situations that you can prepare for. It's really almost unacceptable. It's not like anybody's trying anything revolutionary from most set pieces these days anyway. So you can kind of preempt, especially from corners or free kicks in the corner position. I think that's really disappointing to see sides at the top level concede from there. Defensively, other than that, I feel like Schmelzer sometimes has. You know, it's interesting to make him captain because I feel like sometimes he's gone back to or reverted to the form that had question marks over him. He's looked encouraging going forward, but a fullback's position is not primarily for that, especially when the man in front of you is so often Rafael Guerrero, who, let's be honest, is a brilliant player. You know, you don't need a defender in that position who's strong in an attacking sense. You need him to be good defensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like there are a lot of issues defensively for Dortmund that they need to get ironed out. But one of the reasons that it looks so bad is because they play such a high line. So often they are very exposed. We saw that against Real Madrid. It's effective if you press and everybody works hard together.
Yeah.
But if you don't, and you leave the back line ready, exposed in that situation, and you saw it on the Real Madrid's opening goal.
Yeah,
and I don't want to mention it because we're obviously talking about Leverkusen and their goals are slightly different. But if you look at the second goal from Leverkusen, it's almost similar. Okay, granted, different situation. Yeah, they've got to try and get an equaliser. But at that stage of the game against Madrid, Dortmund were looking to take the lead, and their strategy in the opening 20 minutes there was to play a very high line to press, almost like Leverkusen did against them on the weekend. And then you have a situation where the ball goes wide and Socrates comes all the way out to the right-hand side to try and make the tackle, slips. Then there's a gap in the centre. And because Real Madrid are one of the best teams in the world, they pass it superbly and they score. Now, okay, Leverkusen aren't one of the best teams in the world, but they can also pass the ball extremely well. And I know you talked about it on the weekend, Steph, that ball from Folland is just brilliant because it's exactly the ball that cuts the defence. Mm-hmm. But that's the risk that Thomas Tuchel's tactic is. So you have to be wary when you criticise the decisions we can definitely criticise because it shouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm.
But because they have such a high line and he wants to press so hard, they are going to be exposed to such situations.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I was going to say... That Real Madrid goal, I think one of the observations I made is how many Dortmund players were actually in the Real Madrid half of the field. When they made that break forward, they just were completely outnumbered.
Although that all comes from
a
brilliant pass by Luka Modric.
Yeah, for sure. So.
I think you make some good points defensively, John. But if I could, if there's one thing I'd maybe add to that, it's something that I think one of us mentioned on the pod early in the season when we were first talking about this team that Dortmund were trying to put together this summer, and the fact was that they were signing a lot of young, exciting players, but we weren't too sure whether any of these players were going to be actual match winners. And I think if you actually look at the way that both teams changed things throughout the match, I think that's probably, there's actually something to tell there. I mean, I think, Roger Schmidt took Julian Brandt off because he wasn't having a great game. He takes Lars Bender off because I thought Lars Bender was actually having a good game, but he takes him off at halftime.
Yeah, he picked up an injury though, so that was kind of an
that's
injury.
That's right, so you're right. But, Brandt comes off, Kevin Volland goes on, Charles Aranguez goes off, Baumgartlinger comes on. And for Tuchel, if his big players, and I think we could probably say Roda and Gonzalo Castro are probably more senior members of his team,
yeah,
all he has to turn to are players like Emery Moore, Shinji Kagawa. I mean, Kagawa hasn't had a great season so far this season. And to add to what you were saying in the sense of Pulisic and Dembele, this Dortmund team very quickly began to resemble, a team of kids who looked quite scared at times. I remember at one point, Tuchel was screaming at Moore because he kept cutting inside instead of running down the wing. And to be fair to Moore, he had about two or three Dortmund Leverkusen defenders quickly hiring him to try and do something. So I think, you guys make good points. You could say that Leverkusen looked hungrier, maybe Dortmund looked tired, maybe Dortmund weren't defending properly. But I think this is also perhaps an overarching theme for me is that, Dortmund don't seem to have these really key senior players. I mean, and I guess the easy answer to that would be that they sold three of them this summer. I guess one senior player who really didn't show up on Saturday was Aubameyang. If he scores those two chances, it's a completely different game. And his counterpart on the other side of the pitch, Chicharito, did score those goals, or he scored one rather. Maybe that's the difference between a defeat and a draw or something like that. But I just thought that was quite telling, the fact that, maybe Tuchel doesn't have the answers or doesn't have those senior players who can rely on in these big games. And that might be a factor as to, why it didn't work out and why it might not continue to work out in the bigger games this season.
But that's part of the reason why I think that Ross's point about not measuring Dortmund by Bayern is extremely valid, because Thomas Tuchel is obviously treating this like a long-term project, and he has to, having lost his spine in the summer. I think anybody who expected those players, we all didn't expect, and I think that that's clear, that none of us expected Dembele or Moore to be amazing instantly. And I think even when you look at Aubameyang, when he first arrived, his first season was very mixed. People weren't sure about what he was. Is he a winger? Is he a striker? And then he became, the striker that Dortmund always needed. So I'm actually very excited about what Dembele and Pulisic will look like next season.
Year, yeah.
because, you know, then you have situations where they've been to Leverkusen and lost 2-0 and they've been at home against Real Madrid and they've pulled the game back out of nowhere, you know? Yeah, and I think given that, it will be more exciting next season. I know that sounds silly, six games into this season, but I think maybe we can, what I mean is maybe we can start to formulate the Dortmund versus Bayern argument a bit more next season. Not entirely, but it certainly has a bit more validity next season than it does this year, where it's a case of Dortmund is still building, Bayern are miles ahead, and, you know, that's basically the lay of the land.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask this too, Ross, is what is the balance right now? Because they obviously have a lot of players that are young, that are really young attackers. But, I mean, they also spent most of their money that they made on André Schürrle and Mario Götze. So what, I mean, we haven't really had an opportunity to see the full balance because André Schürrle's been hurt and Mario Götze's been hurt. But how is this eventually going to shake out?
Yeah, I mean, I said at the time I wasn't really too convinced by Dortmund spending almost 50 million euros on those two players in particular. Mm. And I agree totally with what John was saying there, actually. I mean, I'm a firm believer that like characters are a big part of winning. I think there's a kind of culture going on now where people can watch a 4-second Vine and think, oh, this guy's brilliant. Yeah. But, you know, he loses the ball or he won't chase back. And when you look at Dembele, for example, for me, if I was playing with him, I think he'd be very frustrating.
So frustrating.
Yeah. And I think if you look about even at the Klopp team, I know you had guys like Hummels, you had Subotic, Weidenfeller, Shaheen, Bender. You had characters, and I don't know if this Dortmund team has guys who you would say are leaders. I don't think Sebastian Rode is a leader. I mean, he was a bit part player at Bayern.
Götze is not a leader.
Götze is not a leader.
Schürrle is not a leader.
Yeah, I think Schürrle is
maybe more, but he's not like a match.
Gonzalo Castro, I don't really see him as being a leader. Even in defence, I mean, Ginter, Bartra. Socrates,
maybe.
Roman Bürki. For me, I think goalkeepers are the most important leader you want in the team. And I don't know, I mean, if I even compare Dortmund to Atletico Madrid, who are kind of one of the outside teams in Spain who are competing, and they've got characters. They've got guys who will drive them on. Yeah. They've got a coach who's obviously who is really intense. But they've got guys like Gabi, even Koke, who are these guys can take games by the scruff of the neck. Antoine Griezmann, the best player. He's a character. He's got real mental resilience. And I just wonder that they've taken a lot of gambles this summer, Dortmund. You look at Dembele, Guerrero's obviously turned out to be, I think, better than a lot of people expected. Emery Moore, I said to you on Saturday, I think he looks like a kid playing in an old man's game.
He looks like a PlayStation footballer.
Pulisic has got great potential. I'm a big fan. I think he's actually well mature beyond his years.
Yep.
But you can't have him and three other guys who are still developing. You can't rely on one guy who's 18 years old. So for me, I think this, obviously Mikhail Zorka is the sporting director, but I think the managing of the squad maybe wasn't as thought out as it could have been. Maybe they could have brought in a more experienced player. They could have brought in a run-of-the-mill goalkeeper who might have been a bit of a character, might have been a bit of a nutcase, but that might have been the difference.
And it's interesting when you look at Klopp and how he's done that. You know, Ragnar Klavan, right? Super character. Alexander Manninger. Yeah. Not going to play many games, but he's super character. Yeah, you know, people like this, you need that. And I think you're spot on by saying that because Dortmund are literally just a group of very talented, very headstrong young men, but they haven't got the experience or the leadership to be able to take situations like the weekend and say, hey, okay, we're not playing particularly well, but we need to do more. We need to have a plan B. We need to get a grip, and that's a real issue at the moment. You know, Weidenfeller can't have that kind of impact from the bench. You know, Shaheen can't have that impact from the medical centre. So, it is a bit of a problem for them going forward. Absolutely. Next season.
Yeah, but John, here's the thing though. Like, it's easy to say next season, but you don't even have to compare them to Bayern Munich to criticise the way that they've bought this summer. You can compare them to Bayer Leverkusen. You compare the way that the Dortmund have signed players, the way Leverkusen have signed players, and you can give, in my opinion, plenty of credit to Leverkusen. As we've said, Dortmund have signed their array of young players and spent a fortune on Bundesliga maybes in Schürrle and Götze. But you know, Leverkusen said, "Hey, we need a forward who can play on either wing. Let's go get Kevin Volland. We need a quality centre back. Let's spend a fortune getting Dragovic. We need a defence midfielder. Let's go get Baumgartlinger." And they're not
all three actually really strong characters too. You have Baumgartlinger, of course. Perennial captain with Austria and with Mainz, and also Kevin Volland, who's a captain of the U21 side and also was the leader of that Hoffenheim team last year.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not really about, I mean, yeah, it's fine. I'm sure when people pick up the are playing FIFA this season, they might be like, oh, you know, Dortmund are so much fun because they've got so many young, fast, you know, exciting players. But from one week to the next, that's not what wins you football games. It might be well and good to say that Dortmund have, you know, four or five of the most exciting players who will be good in 4 or 5 years. But let's be honest, almost all those players probably won't even be playing for Dortmund if they reach even half the potential that they have. So, I mean, I've got far more respect for a club like Leverkusen who say, hey, we want to finish in the top three or top four. We want to try and challenge Dortmund. You know, we're going to go buy the specific players we need for our starting 11, and we'll fill the other spots up with young players or players we already have. I think that's much more pragmatic.
I don't disagree, though. I don't disagree, mate. I agree with you 100%. The only thing I would say is that Leverkusen, it's quite ironic that they said, I mean, I agree with all the points you made about signings and whatnot, but it's ironic that Leverkusen would wait until match day 6 to show the first piece of evidence that's convincing that they will actually challenge Dortmund.
Yeah.
Because as much as those signings have been good and they are sensible and they are good for the squad and the right signings to make, and it's not all about signing YouTube footballers, they haven't exactly looked pretty convincing. Yeah, they've had a bad piece of luck here and there, but I mean, you know, beating Dortmund in a game against against Dortmund is important for them. But if they can't get it done against, you know, Augsburg or Darmstadt, Cologne, it's not going to be an easy season for them. Obviously, it's a long way to go, and being presumptuous, but I think they've got to do a lot more walking before they can start talking like that.
I think that's a little harsh. They're only 2 points behind Dortmund.
Yeah, but...
Well, you say they're way off Dortmund. They're now only 2 points behind them. And this is a Dortmund team who, up until Saturday, who were still fighting strong. Sure, they had a blip against Leipzig, but ahead of Saturday, everyone thought Dortmund were going to win that game. Leverkusen were the out-of-form team, Dortmund were the team who were pushing for second. And, you know, within a day or two, things have changed entirely. So, you know...
I don't know whether I'd go that far by saying things have changed entirely. I mean, we're in 6 games into the season. Your point about the fact that they're 2 points behind is, yeah, absolutely, they're only 2 points behind. But you're talking about challenging Dortmund. I presume you don't just mean this season. You mean sort of, you know, challenging Dortmund to the number two spot. I'm not sure they're going to get there. Yeah, I mean, confident they'll finish in the top four. They're definitely one of the best four teams in Germany. But I don't know. Roger Schmidt makes just as many tactical errors as Thomas Tuchel does. So this weekend he made none, and he was superb, and it was definitely a win for him. But Schmidt has his usual dip.
I'm
still hesitant to jump to say that Leverkusen, especially given their reputation, they have a reputation of not getting it done. So
I think we're kind of rounding off towards the same point here. I think the only thing I was trying to add was that you don't even have to compare Dortmund to Bayern Munich to see, you know, the shortcomings they've already made in the transfer market, in my opinion, this
summer.
Agreed, yeah. You know, you don't have to be challenging for the title. Dortmund can quite easily already look like a team that might be limited in the manner in which they want to confidently finish second, in my opinion. So, but like you said, it's early in the season. We'll wait to see. But I thought Saturday was... a notable game, which showed the shortcomings in the squad.
Well, that notable game put Dortmund even further behind Bayern Munich. The biggest thing, of course, being that Bayern Munich dropped points at the weekend for the first time this season.
Instant sign that Dortmund were not going to win this game.
Yeah, it seems to be the case now in this day and age. But obviously that was a very entertaining game between Cologne and Bayern. Carlo Ancelotti made 7 changes from the team in midweek. And he certainly paid the price getting his first, draw as the coach of, Bayern Munich. Stefan, you've been pretty critical of Bayern's form in the last few weeks, even while they were on a winning streak. Was this result really that surprising to you?
Well, firstly, I like how every segment starts with "Stefan, you've been awfully critical." seems to be a running theme here. I thought it was, again, much the same as we've seen of Bayern this season. Pretty useless. I thought, once again, you know, they look pretty abject, and then someone steps up. So far this season, it seems to be Joshua Kimmich. But again, it was just completely abject. I thought I thought Robin started off really well, actually. He looked back to his usual best. He was skipping by players at ease. He was cutting inside. He wasn't shooting, oddly enough, but he was quite happily just almost walking through that Cologne defence. But he obviously couldn't do much about it. But then, of course, just before halftime, Joshua Kimmich grabbed the goal from a fantastic Bernat dribble and cross. But again, it was another game in which we saw the likes of Lewandowski, Coman, not Thomas Müller to an extent. I thought Müller was actually okay when he came on. But it's just another game in which Bayern just looked so slow. They looked so lazy. The only way I can really describe it is that at the moment, Bayern are playing like a team who expect to pick up 3 points before they even get started. And I think in a lot of times in the Bundesliga, that actually can be the case, except for this season. I think the last two seasons under Pep Guardiola, teams, except for the Jurgen Ingolstadt and Darmstadt, for example, who did show up in specific games. So I think a lot of the time, whenever Bayern came to town, a lot of teams really did just, you know, give up and then just think, right, let's go on to the next one. But as we've seen this season with the likes of Schalke, and I think it was Ingolstadt a few weeks ago, and of course Cologne this weekend, where teams are not only, you know, not taking it, but they actually think, you know what, this Bayern team's for the taking. Now, fortunately for Ancelotti, if there's any one aspect of this Bayern team that seems to be working, it's the defence, within reason. But you know, it's weird because I look at Lewandowski's stats and I think his goals per minute right now is actually one of the best he's had in his career, oddly enough. But he just looks so abject throughout this match. And if it wasn't for Kimmich just popping up somewhere where perhaps he even really shouldn't be, it would have been a Cologne win. And Cologne absolutely should have won this game if Simon Zoller had finished that one-on-one in stoppage time.
What an idiot.
That is the chance that Ross brought it up off air. He said that's the chance that everybody's going to look at when
they
see Cologne's highlights.
By that. And so, it should be.
I wanted to turn to Ross next, actually, because he also brought up an interesting point. Under Pep Guardiola, this would have been seen in a much more negative light. But it seems like under Ancelotti, that doesn't seem to be the case, at least from what I've read anyways in the German media the day after. Why do you think that is?
I think that's just probably part of the attraction to Ancelotti. I mean, with Guardiola, he was so intense that he didn't... It's difficult to really say. I mean, there were some people at Bayern who obviously didn't take to him. And when Bayern didn't win, you know, everyone was lining up to come out and say how wrong it was to employ Guardiola. Like Beckenbauer would be coming out saying things. Lothar Matthäus would come out and say things. Rummenigge and Hoeneß would be saying things. Hoeneß, even from his prison, would be saying things. Probably. They would go to that extent to undermine him. But with Ancelotti is so much more of a fit to Bayern's culture that it's kind of a case of...
He's Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, who cares? We didn't win one game, you know. And I can understand why that's the attraction, but... I said this to you before we come on here. I just find it so difficult to see a lot in Bayern right now because they're just not going to be as good as what they were the last 3 years. I mean, okay, they might go on and win the Champions League. They might do it. Who knows? Who knows what can happen? But in the league, there's no way they're going to rack up the amount of points they did last year.
Finalists in Wales, right? That's where the final is, because they cannot win in Spain. So if they go to Spain, then they're in trouble. Yeah, so maybe they'll have a chance in the final.
Like, I think Stefan made a great point. I think they've been so passive as well in games. Like this game on Saturday was a really good example because... Like we said, like Cologne for the last 15-20 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, we turned on the game, and there was this kind of like urge that, oh, they're actually going to do it. I mean, under Guardiola, I don't remember any games where Bayern were really under ridiculous pressure, right? But Cologne threw the kitchen sink at them, and after the Timo Horn made that fantastic
unbelievable
save, there was this kind of thing, oh, we're actually going to do this, and the ceiling's all a chance was there, but Osaka was through and goal 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
And like you say, I mean, this could have gone either way. I have concerns about Bayern when they lose possession. I think they don't press high anymore. Yeah. They like to drop. They try to drop back, but they're so slow in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Teams can get through them. I mean, Martinez, for all he might be a fairly competent defender, when he has to turn and face his own goal, he's extremely slow. So slow. I think even for the Bundesliga, that's a real risk to continue playing him at centre-back.
Well, Griezmann actually definitely took advantage of that several times. It's sort of Fernando Torres, the old man's Fernando Torres, just taking advantage of that.
The big question mark really is whether Bayern can go from being really passive in some games to lifting it to the level that they need to when they play, for example, in the Champions League, when they play I don't know who they've got in the next match day in the Champions League.
They have, PSV.
PSV, okay, yeah. PSV maybe not the level that we need to be, but when they play Atletico again, can they lift it to the level that they need to be at? Can they lift it when they play Dortmund? Can they lift it when they play Leipzig or Mönchengladbach or Leverkusen? I don't know. That's the big question mark about Ancelotti, but I know we were talking about these kind of things, presuming what's going to happen. I would ban league tables until like the 10th or 15th game. But, you know, those, for me, those are the big games in the first half of the season that will be a real indicator as to whether Bayern are going in the right direction.
And it will be interesting to see how they react to this because, you know, international break now. Time
they went to Oktoberfest.
No. I mean on the pitch. I think the word, the reoccurring word here is just this presumptuous nature that Bayern have. They just presume that they're going to win these games. And there was definitely, I totally agree with you guys, that there was definitely a feeling of that in the first 20 minutes. You know, we just pass it around, the chance will come, you know, we'll get a goal.
Oh, the tempo was so slow.
It was awful, you know, and you're right. We never would have seen that under Guardiola. We never would have seen that. And it's funny how a lot of Bayern fans, you know, I think I even saw, somebody tweeted on the weekend about how they thought this was one of the worst performances ever at Bayern and that they should chuck Carlo Ancelotti out. It's just one of these Bayern fans that's just obviously so fanatical that they can't see outside of their own house.
But, to be fair, I tweeted after the Ingolstadt game that was like the worst time, that's the worst performance.
But you didn't say
Bayern
that they should chuck Carlo Ancelotti out, right? Yeah, you know, like, and it comes to this point where, you know, Bayern obviously know that they have the best team in the league. They have to be very careful to verge on the caution of presumption. But, you know, going into this game, right, they've won every game under Ancelotti other than the Atletico game. Yeah. So that they're in an extremely confident mood, especially in the Bundesliga, right, where they basically reign supreme. And it will be a question, I think, after the international break, whether they can sort of jolt themselves together and say, right, we've got to get out of this sort of sleep, this sleepwalking that we're going through the league and it's going to be easy. Because you're right, Steph, they're not going to pick up the same number of points. They are going to struggle. And, you know, against a side that really should have won this game, I mean, okay, you can look at it both ways. You know, Bernat hits the post, a couple of chances. Horn pulls off a wonder save. But Simon Zola should score.
Like, you wonder what's going through his head. It's like, I get the ball. Oh, I'm through and goal. Oh, I'm through and goal. Oh, no, there's Neuer. Oh, my God.
my thing is, Simon Zola is a second division striker.
Yes, yeah.
So in that moment, he's not thinking what a striker should be thinking. He should be thinking next touch, bottom right. He's thinking, oh, my God, it's the 91st minute. I'm through 1-1 against Manuel Neuer in Munich. This is for the win. Oh dear!
Well, that's my mum in the stand.
Yeah,
oh,
that's my mum. Yeah, exactly.
No, I think it's interesting that at this point in Pep Guardiola's first season, he also had the exact same amount of points. He drew with Freiburg in the fourth match day. And one thing that sticks in my head is that in Pep Confidential, he says, I think it's something along the lines of he was quite surprised at the, you know, the speed and the ferocity of Bundesliga teams, even the lesser teams, the way they counterattacked his Bayern side, and that's something he had to adjust to. And I think just looking at the lineup that Bayern put out on Saturday, it really, really stunk of, you know, Ancelotti really expecting to win this game before it even started. He went up against a team who were undefeated in the Bundesliga. Now, sure, it's only been five games, but to keep Thomas Müller, Arturo Vidal, Philipp Lahm, Jerome Boateng, David Alaba all on the bench against a team who will undoubtedly cause you trouble, it just screams of, you know, naivety. And I think
those seven changes that he made, Stefan, to continue on what you're saying, is he over-rotating his squad right now?
I think that certainly could be the case. I think with a squad like Bayern,
I was going to say,
yeah, with
Bayern's
squad, he should be winning regardless of playing. But I think that's just one aspect. I was going to make a second point. The second point also was the fact that you know, if you just look at the style of the two managers between him and Pep, I think there were some glaring differences. First, of course, was the way that he was acting on the sideline. At no point did Ancelotti ever look angry. The way that Pep used to ferociously scream at the side of the pitch, he was angry. Even if they were 2-0 up and they were misplaced enough passes, he was furious. That team were on their toes for 90 minutes. You know, when did the goal came? Sure, just before halftime. But once Cologne equalised, late in the game, it never seemed to me as if he, at any point, sorry, not late in the game, midway through the second half, it never seemed to me that Ancelotti was ever angry. Now, that might be his
I'm
style.
I'm not sure I'd put that I mean, some of the best managers in the game, you don't need to shout from the sidelines to keep your side. That's more on the players than the manager for me. I don't think that has any bearing. I don't think the manager needs to be a certain way for the team to play a certain way. I think that that's on the players not being on their toes anyway. If you're not on your toes in the top division as Bayern Munich every time you step on the pitch, then you shouldn't be on the pitch. That's not a question of whether Carlo Ancelotti is pointing or gesturing or saying the right things from the sideline. He's already said all the right things and the players already know what they have to do and how to do it before the game and at half time. I don't know whether that's necessarily a reason that Bayern were lax. I think Bayern were lax because they are regularly lax in the league, and it's just like every other Saturday. They're just going for a stroll in Munich, you know, and I think that was their undoing. I think it'll be interesting to see how they react to it, because, you know, are they going to stroll out next time they're in Frankfurt and be like, oh, you know, hey, you know, it's going to be the same situation.
Frankfurt at home,
one of those sides, they're going to step on your toes and, you know, kick you and make it difficult. And Kovac has had a really good start with them. Yeah. So I think I think some of the best managers in the game don't tend to shout and gesticulate from the sidelines. I get what you mean, but I feel like that's more of a player's issue than if you can't motivate yourself. To do your job properly, then
I kind of completely disagree, if I'm honest with you, John. Jose Mourinho shouts, Pep Guardiola shouts, you know, that ferocious coach in Atletico Madrid shouts, and if you're one of the best teams in the league, and
Carlo Ancelotti's won the Champions League with
he doesn't win the league, and in the league it's where you get complacent, and that's exactly what Bayern did. And to stop your team from getting complacent,
but Bayern have been complacent for years.
No, they weren't. They were never complacent under Pep Guardiola.
There were times where they looked like they were always going to win the game. The difference was that they won the game.
I think if there's one thing you can say about Pep Guardiola's Bayern Munich team is in the league, they were never complacent. They might have looked out of their depth. They might have been tactically wrong in the latter stages of the Champions League, but they always looked tuned in the Bundesliga games, even the games where they perhaps didn't even have to. This team looked like it was, like you said, you're absolutely right, they looked like a stroll through the park. But it also, and I think part of that is because they had a coach at the sideline who wasn't shouting at them. Now, as well as that, you know, players like Renato Sanchez, the way he was playing on Saturday would have never happened under Pep Guardiola. He was strolling around that middle of the pitch with nothing to do for much of the game. Now, he got stuck in, he made passes, fine. But, the one thing that I really took away from that game was, again, Sanchez just drops into this team when Vidal gets tired. And it doesn't seem to me as though Ancelotti actually tells him to do anything. Joshua Kimmich is in that team. He's got a specific role. He gets stuck in. He gets forward when he can. Alonso, everyone knows what Alonso does, but I don't know what Sanchez does. If he's supposed to be doing what Vidal does, he's not doing it. And if that's either his fault or Ancelotti's not telling him how to do it, but I just, the way that Sanchez
is telling him how to do it in the middle of the game, he should be aware of that before the game.
The kid's
19. I see what you mean about intensity on the sidelines, but I'm
not sure.
Kid's
19 years old. I mean, these are all, they're professionals, but they're also young men playing against a team who half of them probably have never even heard of because they're from another side of the planet. So, you know, they're huge superstars, and it's not injury, it's not form that's going to get in the way of these guys. It's going to be complacency. And you're right, maybe this is Ancelotti's style, and maybe it pays off in May when the team aren't mentally exhausted from someone like Pep Guardiola screaming at them every week. But right now, in the league, where Ancelotti tends to fall over, they look complacent.
Yeah. Well, the statistic worth mentioning there is that he has as many league titles, 3, in his years of coaching as he does in
That's a direct result of his lack of ferocity on the sidelines. I mean, we can agree to disagree. That's fine, you know. We're grown men. It's fine. But I just don't buy it. I don't buy the someone needs to be shouting at you on the sidelines. I just don't understand that. Like, I'm sure it helps some players, but every player has a different approach to the game. And as a manager, you have to be aware of how best to get the best out of your team, your players in those situations. Just because some of the best coaches in history have shouted on the sidelines, and, you know, the varying degrees of aggression on the sidelines. You know, Jurgen Klopp is extremely emotional on the sidelines, and that's probably why one of the people love him so much, because he's so visibly emotional. But there are other managers who've been extremely successful. Obviously, you know, Arsene Wenger hasn't been successful in a very long time, but he's rarely someone that's shouting from the sidelines. You know, and I think there's a case of it comes down to the individuals. I agree with you. Renato Sanches looks completely out of his depth. He doesn't look like he knows what he's doing. Bayern look very complacent. But I think that that's an issue that isn't directly related to being told what to do.
What about you, Russ? Do you want someone shouting at you on the sideline when you're doing what you have to do?
Doing what I have to do.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
we shout at him all the time in the office.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, John. I kind of agree with you that footballers, I say footballers, but professional athletes of that kind of quality should be self-motivated. I mean, I don't want to compare footballers to Olympians and tennis stars and all that kind of thing, but these guys don't need anyone to shout at them. They don't need this, but they are so driven. And I look at this Bayern team now, and we talked about characters. I think without someone like Bastian Schweinsteiger shouting away, kind of like in your ear all the time, in the referee's ear, that Bayern team on Saturday didn't really have that. I'm not saying that's a reason for them not winning the game. Of course it's not. Wouldn't have got that from Mats Hummels. Wouldn't have got that from Martinez. You won't get that from Kimmich, Alonso.
Vidal, but he was on the bench.
Lam was on the bench. Yeah. And actually, one player.
Boateng was on the bench.
Boateng, he as well. But one player I think is actually a really good player for that, which unfortunately we haven't really seen, was Holger Badstuber. And he was a guy that when Joshua Kimmich was playing next to him, he was like, "You're doing this, and you're doing it right." Or else I'm going to yell at you for doing it wrong.
I mean,
I think you were right. There wasn't really a player like that was playing in that game.
You would expect that. You would expect that of guys at Bayern Munich who would be self-driven. Arjen Robben, he's a guy who will moan at you and tell you to buck up your ideas.
Came off at halftime.
Frank
Ribery.
On
the bench too.
With Joshua Kimmich, it's. I wouldn't say it's a sad state of affairs that Bayern are relying on a 21-year-old, but he is kind of the embodiment of how other players should be performing. And I agree with you with Sanchez. I was a little bit reluctant to say that after the Schalke game, but from what I've seen so far, I've still not really been that impressed.
Yeah, definitely.
I just haven't seen. I know he's a young player. I know he's got time to develop, but he doesn't look to me as being a player who can do it at the highest level
This is the argument, Yes, he is a young player.
And he's won a European Championship.
And everyone's saying, give him time, he's 19. Yeah. Fine. However, he is a European champion, and he's been signed by Bayern Munich. So, yes, he's 19, and yes, he's young, and yes, he needs time to develop to a new country, a new lifestyle, a new team, and new manager. Sure. Yeah. But, he's not been bought by St. Pauli.
No.
Right? So, there's a level... He's not on loan. He's not gone out to Crawley away, right? Crawley Town to get some experience. Okay. He's playing for the biggest team in Germany, one of the biggest teams in the world, because they think he can do it for them. So there has to be an element in which you're saying, you certainly shouldn't be saying what we're all saying, which is exactly what Steph's just said. What's he doing? What's his role?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
That's the question. That's the issue for me. Okay. Yeah, he needs bedding in period and all of that stuff. But after, what is it, 3 games, 4 games? You can't be like, what is his role? I'm still not sure what he's supposed to be doing, because that's the concern for me.
Well, how much of that is on Ancelotti?
A lot of that's on Ancelotti. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And my follow-up question to that is Ancelotti the right coach to get the best out of him?
Well, the time will tell. We'll have to see. I mean, it's one of those situations.
Because to me, I think that Pep Guardiola would have been a perfect match for the best coach in the world.
Hard to take him as the measure for everything. And that's another point to what you're saying, Steph. Pep Guardiola is it's like comparing Dortmund to Bayern. It's like, hold on. This guy is so incredible at what he does. And you only have to look at what he's done with Manchester City in the 2.5 minutes he's been there, to see how effective he is at getting the best out of young players.
Another interesting selling point is that you don't have Matthias Sammer on the touchline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. In the manager's ear saying, get this done, and shouting at players. So absolutely. Maybe that's an influence in it as well. I doubt it, but...
Could play a role.
When you don't have Guardiola and Sammer, and you have a guy who's...
Hoeneß will be back soon, don't worry.
Yeah. There's a reason why those guys are bald.
Yeah, I mean, I think
they're pulling their hair out because they're so.
Right. Hoeneß will be back soon. Don't
I think that's a really good point.
You're running a little bit short on time, but I think John and I wanted to get to this discussion about Cologne.
Oh right,
real
quick. Okay, yeah. We can do.
Which is, we wrote pretty much opposite pieces.
Yeah, absolutely.
For Deutsche Welle this week, I wrote a piece about how they still have this identity of a mid-table team, even though they're off to their best start since 1987. And you,
it's a damning piece of contradictory evidence.
And you called, and you called them contenders for European spots. So since you started offline with your argument, I'm going to start with mine. The example that I used in my piece was the managerial decision at the end of the Leipzig game, which was basically he saved two substitutions for after the 80th minute. And it seemed like against Leipzig, a team that he's probably going to have to fight for one of those European spots, he seemed very comfortable just going for the draw, picking up the point, and basically moving on. To me, that is the mindset of a mid-table team.
Okay.
That is the now I know that they're off to their best start. It's because of that kind of thinking that they are unbeaten in the first place. But at the same time, there has to be some kind of ambition in order to challenge for those top spots. You saw Mainz last year. At the second half of the season, Martin Schmidt got the best out of that Mainz team, and they looked like a very motivated side. When Andre Schubert took over from Gladbach after losing the first five games, they looked like a very motivated side. He took a lot of tactical risks at times in order to get more results. I don't think that Peter Stöger is that kind of coach. I'm not faulting him for being that kind of coach, because I know that Cologne are currently in their position in the Bundesliga after going back down to the second division because he's that kind of coach. But at some point, when you're playing Leipzig at home or you're playing against Bayern Munich and they look completely out of sorts, those are the times that you have to go for those 3 points and you have to try to get the victory.
I can understand that. I think his conservatism actually is laced with an increasing sense of ambition. It's just a slightly longer term project, I think, ambition wise. First arrived in the league, lots of draws. Second season, lots of 0-0 draws. He had a reputation for very dull to watch, very difficult to watch. They went about signing a few more attacking players. Bittencourt came in. Modest was a very smart replacement for Uja. In fact, he's an upgrade on Uja. And they have basically, over an extended period of time, sustainably built themselves towards being genuine contenders for a European spot. Point about Leipzig. Leipzig are an anomaly. They're going to finish in the European spaces, I'm pretty confident, because they are one of the best drilled teams in the league, super defensively. And to be honest with you, most teams who approach the 80th minute at 1-1 with Leipzig will be very happy with the point, because Leipzig are a very good team. Like the method, like the model, whatever, or not, doesn't matter. They're a very good football team. So I can totally appreciate would have done that. Against Bayern, in the Allianz Arena, same situation. Whether Bayern are playing well or not, you're on the verge of getting a result that 98% of teams don't get in that situation. You're more worried about keeping things ticking over. And I think of Cologne a bit like a cricket team in the sense that they keep ticking their tally of points over, right? They're not always going all out for the big hit. Sometimes they just take in the singles, right? And they're just patiently playing. And I think that that's going to be a strategy that pays off for them. When you look at the size they're going up against in the European running, okay, Leipzig away, that's fine. There's going to be one more spot, right? Hoffenheim have a goal scorer, but have an average goalkeeper, right? Let down by the fact that, you know, maybe in midfield they're a bit thin. Having said that, Hoffenheim will probably be there at the end of it because Nagelsmann is a good coach and they too are undefeated. Hertha will also be in there because they're also a good start. Pau Dardai has certainly proven that he can get over disappointments, you know, losing to Bromby, missing out on Europa League football. Who cares? We're second in the league. Bedad Ibisevic is captain. He's now a reformed man and scoring goals. Hertha's defence, maybe a little bit more porous than Cologne's. You know, Cologne have the best goalkeeper outside of the top four for me. He's better than Leno for me. And probably better than Berkey.
Yes, he's better than Berkey.
But that's my point. I think that there are a lot of factors in Cologne's team that certainly suggest to me that they're above a lot of those mid-table teams. And this mid-table attitude, just a final point, you know, when you look at the sides that have made European runs, they have been sides that don't have that attitude. Cologne have not got this expectation to get into Europe. Mainz certainly didn't. Frankfurt certainly didn't. Freiburg certainly didn't.
Well, after their start now, because there's this.
But I think that Peter Stöger will keep the feet on the ground, and he will say, "Let's, you know, like most managers do, but externally." But I think internally it'll be the same thing. I think you just watch them. You know, obviously the defining part will be the second half of the season, like you said about Martin Schmidt and Mainz. How can you come back after Christmas? Can you be strong again?
Yeah.
That will be the defining moment for Cologne. But I just think they have all the ingredients. They have certain elements that other sides don't have, and quite frankly, defense, to use an American analogy here, wins championships. Now, they don't win the league, but it certainly will get them closer to what they want than having the key goal scorers.
Okay, well, the other point that I made was, who have they played?
They haven't played big teams, and they're coming up to a stretch.
They have not played the big teams.
They're coming up to a stretch that will be
important. Cologne have played Wolfsburg, Schalke, Leipzig, and Bayern. If anything, they've only played the big teams.
Okay, Wolfsburg, first of all, cannot score. Schalke went on a five-match losing streak, and Freiburg, who was probably arguably their biggest victory, was just promoted back.
Yeah,
and
their
defense could fall apart tomorrow.
Steph's point is yes, correct. But I mean, yeah, okay, Schalke terrible. You can win, you can lose. That's fine. Wolfsburg, yeah, okay, no goals, out of form, same situation. But that's a credit to Cologne that they are taking advantage of those sides, because most teams in this division don't do that. And if there's any evidence of that situation, it's Borussia Dortmund against Bayer Leverkusen this weekend.
Sure.
The out-of-form team won that game, even though Borussia Dortmund, as Steph said, were expected to win that. They didn't take advantage of the situation that Cologne have basically been doing over the last few weeks. And you have to, when you're in that situation in the fixture list and you're looking at those tables and you're looking at the games, you're thinking, okay, wow, Wolfsburg, Schalke, Bayern, that's going to be a tough few games for us there. Hold on a minute, are they? Wolfsburg can't score, Schalke are rubbish, and Bayern, well, okay, tricky game, we got a point. That's credit to Cologne. I don't think there are very many other sides in the division that can go away and get the results that they've got. And they happen to have the little bit of good fortune that they have played those teams at that time. Anybody who plays Schalke now, completely different situation.
Sure.
So credit to them.
Yeah, of course, credit to them to where they're at, because obviously this is unprecedented. Well, it is precedented, but it's precedented like 30 years ago. So credit to them for being unbeaten after five match days. But there were opportunities
I don't think this ambition point is valid from a Cologne perspective. It's not a mid-table mindset. It's a conservative mindset with a long-term view to success. Just because you're drawing 1-1 with Bayern Munich with 10 minutes to go, or just because you're drawing 1-1 with Leipzig with 10 minutes to go, doesn't mean you need to go all out for the win every time.
Have to do that every time.
No, but against those two teams specifically, I would not do that. Leipzig are going to punish you on the break. We've already seen how devastating they can be when they move forward. And Bayern Munich are Bayern Munich. I would totally take the point against both of those teams. I think Cologne have approached things perfectly well. They have not been dull to watch. They have dispatched sides that they should have done. And they've even dispatched sides who are out of form that other sides can't dispatch, because they don't have the tendency to beat teams like Wolfsburg or Schalke. In truth, we could talk about this
for a week longer.
It's clearly we have different points of view. I think, as we can both agree on the fact that post-Christmas will be the deciding factor.
Yeah. Of course, it's been six match days. So everything that we say, even now, even about Bayern, about Leverkusen, about Dortmund, it's only been six match days. But I think there's a lot of people that are, even now, people are treating them like, I feel like they're still treating them like a mid-table team.
This is football. It takes 20 minutes of YouTube clips for someone to become worth 20 million. You know,
it's just amazing to me too that I've approached people about this topic and they've said, yeah, Cologne's a mid-table team. What else is new? But that's what I'm surprised about, is that they're off to this best start in 30 years. And yet people are saying, oh, they're a mid-table team.
Yeah, well.
Because when they had that start, they finished third in the league. Now, of course, this is a different age.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, and these are completely different players. But 30 years ago, people, when you have an unbeaten start after six match days, there's a good chance you're finishing at least the top four.
Yeah.
But when people are not saying that about Cologne.
No, but that's good. That's good for Cologne. That's what they want. You know, they want to be grounded. I don't think people... Yeah. And again, you said it, six games in, it's way too soon to be calling left and right. I'm just saying I would be more inclined, based on the evidence I just explained, to believe that they're going to finish this season in the top seven or top eight.
Okay. All right, well, that wrapped up that quick argument. I think that was the quickest one we've made so far today. So let's go now shout from the Tribuna what we want to shout from the Tribuna this week. So, Stefan, let's start with you, since you've been quiet after your after we've called you for criticizing so much so far in the podcast. What do you want to shout from the Tribune this week?
I think what I probably want to do is briefly mention Schalke. I know we talk about them every week, but something that's kind of popped into my head over the last couple of weeks is the manner in which, I think I actually mentioned this last week on the show with Davis when we were discussing their situation, and it was the players that they've signed, which is an odd thing to mention since they've just picked up their first win, fortuitous, I forgot the word now, very lucky, there we go,
fortuitous,
yeah, we go, sorry, too many pints at lunchtime. I think they've had a very a lucky win against Gladbach, so you know, fair play to them. They're off. But the thing that really interests me, and perhaps concerns me as well, is that, like I said last week, the one thing that's really stood out for me in the last two games for Schalke is that they finally stuck Real and Bolo up front. You know, last week they put him up front alongside Huntelaar, and then in this game on Sunday he played up front as the actual striker, and it seems to have worked. And they're finally getting the best out of him, and I thought that was real. I thought that was quite telling, because even though when you look at the players that Schalke signed this summer on paper, which you know looked very impressive, players like Stambouli, Koke from Sevilla, and Bolo was obviously one of the hottest young players in Europe right now. It's still very much stunk of Schalke just going out to the transfer market and seeing who's available and thinking, oh God, our fans would be so happy if we signed that guy. That would really you know, contrast the idea of Leroy Sané leaving. That would really take some of the heat off us. And I think that was really clear up in, from the way that they've been playing this season, the way that up until Sunday and the game beforehand, Breland Bolo wasn't even played in as a front forward. Now, you know, we compare that to the likes of the other teams in the league who, for example, like Gladbach, they very much, you know, whenever they sell a key player to England or to Dortmund, whatever, they sign a player very similar to him, so it's like for like. Dortmund do the same. I was at Leverkusen week before last, and you know they have an entire system based around statistics. And you know when they wanted to sign Chicharito, it was very much a case of saying we need a poacher that's put in these specific factors into our shortlist. Chicharito popped up, so they spent a year trying to sign him. The same with Kevin Volland, the same with Kevin Campbell. They're not signing players just because they've become transfer listed. They're signing players because they need them. And I think Raphael Honigstein actually made a similar point in his column this week where he said, you know, for the last 5 or 10 years, Schalke have simply been letting agents make players available to them, and then they'd sign them when they decided whether they want them or not, and then they sign them. And I think, you know, we could probably talk till the cows come home about the way Christian Heidel and Marcus Weinziel might want to turn this club around, but I think that specifically how they go about signing players might be one of the most important ways of turning Schalke into, you know, a club that deserves to be at the top of the table.
That's interesting. I thought this summer was a break away from signing players that were just, oh, I felt like it was just at least they signed their players that were a higher quality. Stambouli is great, Champions League experience. Bentaleb is a very talented young player. Mbolo, when played in the right position, I totally agree about that, is obviously going to be very exciting. Naldo was the worst piece of business they've ever done.
Koke was good business, but obviously injured.
Koke was great business as well, just unfortunate with the injury. I thought that it was actually a sensible transfer business from Schalke this summer. They've always needed a bit more strength in the base of their midfield. Johannes Geis had a very poor season last year. They didn't necessarily need to replace Leroy Sané, or you can't really do that anyway because they have enough attacking players, and they got Conor Bianca anyway, and he's a very talented player to play out wide. They have Max Meyer in the middle already. Goretzka plays in the eight. He's solid. Defensively, Benny Hervidis is there. They had a weak spot at right back. Koke was signed to try and help that, but obviously, the injury is a bit of a problem. They didn't solve the striking issue initially because they weren't playing Mbolo there, but then they played him there, and obviously his pace and power was finally on show. So I felt like it was a bit more of a Christian Heidel window this time around. I mean, I totally agree that in the past few years, Schalke have been very lazy at signing players, and they've not signed particularly well. But I felt like this year was a slight change. So it's interesting that you would.
I think you're right. I think that's a fair point. And you're absolutely right in terms of Mbolo. I mean, he's the guy they wanted. They went out and got him.
Yeah, I
think Marcus Weinzierl clearly has a history with Babar Rahman, and that's obviously why he was interested to come back. But in terms of Stambouli and Bentaleb and Konopolanka, you know, to me, these are guys who were not wanted by their clubs. They were players sitting on the bench. They were players who'd obviously told their agents they wanted to move on this summer. Even though, and this is such a weird point because I'm kind of contradicting my own point by saying even though these guys will probably play a role in the team, I think it was still very much a case of, you know, I mean, to me, Schalke have always seemed like the kind of Tottenham of the Bundesliga, where they've got such a high turnover of players. They bring in players, they're like, okay, it's not working, move them on, bring the next one in. They don't think about these things. And you might be right, this summer transfer window might have been Christian Heidel's, you know, had his role in it. But, you know, to me, it's still, you look at the way the squad, and think, like you said, I mean, I think there's probably just as many bad examples as good ones, in my opinion. I think even though, you know, Stambouli might have had a decent start, I still think he, Bentaleb, Naldo, even Babar Rahman. I mean, Babar Rahman's a good player, but they've got Kolasinac, who's, you know, just as good a left back. He was actually, ironically, when he was playing full for Schalke, he was linked to Chelsea when Babar Rahman was playing in the reserve. So I think, yeah, sure, Mbolo's a good example of a young player who they needed, and they've signed him. Thank God. It's shown that, you know, they can play without Huntelaar. I think he's one of the major problems, but I still think there's that stench about the club of, you know, just spending money for money's sake every summer.
Ross, what do you want to shout from the Tribune this week?
Oh, well, sorry to interrupt this kind of lively debate going on here, I wanted to look at Hoffenheim because, I mean, I'm not Julian Nagelsmann's agent and I'm not doing his business, but you have to say that so far this season, they have been fantastic and going well under the radar. Well under the radar. Seven games unbeaten this season in all competitions. They haven't lost yet. Mm. They've won the last two games, so now they're beginning to kind of move up the table. And I just think the way that the team is working, it's functioning really well. There's goals coming from different areas of the pitch. Lucas Rupp, I know we are, John and I are big fans. Two goals already this season. Kerem Demirbay from the second division, who came in from Dusseldorf, has looked really good so far. Mm-hmm. Mark Ruth with 3 and 5.
Yeah.
He's injured at the moment. And Kramaric, I think, is getting better and better as the season goes. Still a little bit concerned defensively. I think although Sula and Fabian Schär have got potential, I think they're a little bit slow. I think there's maybe when they have to turn to face their own goalkeeper, I think there's a little bit of a concern there. But I think interesting with Nagelsmann, because he's getting a lot of press as being this really kind of possession-based coach playing really great football, but actually I think they are being very stable, defensively really solid. If you look at the way the team's set up, they're not playing, you know, gung-ho football. They've got guys up front like Sandro Wagner who are making a big difference. I said that I think by the end of the season, I think he might have a shot of being in the Germany squad. This is a bit ridiculous, but I think he's the type of centre-forward that Germany don't have. If he can do that for 12 months, he's got a chance. He's looking really sharp. I said Demirbay as well, so for me, yeah. Good sight, well under the radar. So are you going to say something
else? I was going to say real quick, why isn't Sandro Wagner considered for the national team?
Because he's he's a difficult character.
Yeah, difficult
it's about
character,
characters,
yeah.
And Löw loves picking the right people. Yeah. And then we'll come back to the point about characters we were making earlier. Mm-hmm. For a national team, it's even more important that the character mix is spot on, because only then is there a genuine sense of unity, not a sense of unity that players always talk about to journalists, but an actual sense of unity inside a camp.
There's the phrase from the All Blacks, no dickheads.
Exactly.
And Sandro Wagner, unfortunately, would go into that category right
probably
now.
Probably one of those, yeah.
But yeah, you know what? If I'm not saying Nagelsmann's going to kind of change him into this kind of really calm, collected character, but if he can do that for 12 months, get a good number of goals under his belt and play consistently at that level, then I don't see why not, because I don't see a lot of number 9 options right now for Germany. And he is a traditional number 9 in the sense that he's big and strong, but his movement is really good. He moves it to the box, and I know that Leo Gomez did really well at the European Championships, but actually he might be the best of both worlds, because he can do the penalty box stuff and he can actually play outside the box as well. Mm-hmm. Sounds a bit ridiculous suggesting Sandro Wagner to be a German international, but you know, youth team player as well, so why not?
John, what do you want to shout from the
Tribune? It's funny you mentioned about strikers. I just have a shout for strikers. What a year it would be if Sandro Wagner makes the Germany team and Vedad Ibisevic, you know, proves that he can be a responsible player, because those are two players that have a track record of being extremely difficult characters in changing rooms. And yet we've already seen 6 games in from Ibisevic that
he's a leader.
And he leads by example.
not just as a leader. But he's been phenomenal. Maybe it's the fact that he's expecting to be and is now a father.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
It's changing him. Yeah,
a lot of you guys haven't seen that on. You look up the goal first. I think it's both goal celebrations.
Yeah, both celebrations.
It was actually.
Yeah.
I thought it was very special.
Yeah, yeah, I was going
to
say that.
Very nice. But I think there's certainly a case to be made about mentally what he must have gone through in that situation. Now what he's going through as a father.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a sense that he's calmed down. Pal Dada deserves a lot of credit for his handling of that situation. Mm. I just wanted to talk about strikers in that sense because I feel like there have been some extremely surprising. Results so far in this season. We've only got 6 games played, so it's a bit soon to talk about a few things, but Ibisevic is one of them, Wagner is another one, Mario Gomez is another one. For a player that played so well at the Euros to go basically revert to the player he was at Bayern at the end where he couldn't score and was dreadful and looked shot of his confidence is a damning indictment of Wolfsburg, but also of the fact that now it seems that the only coach that can get the best out of Mario Gomez is in fact Joachim Löw, and maybe Gomez is just coming to the end, you know, and it's a shame to say that because, you know, the whole of Germany has been waiting to push the button for far too long now that it's kind of become irrelevant, and it's one of those jokes that is told so much that it's not funny, you know, it's like, oh wow, you know, he's still not scored and he keeps missing, it's not like he's not had the chances. So that's been really quite a disappointing situation for a lot of people. But another striker I want to mention is Anthony Modeste. I've been a lot of people talking about him even being in for a shout with the France squad in 2018. Totally deserves it if you think about the fact that they took Gignac to the Euros, who plays in Mexico on the other side of the world, basically just as like some lone soldier, like some cowboy out there. You can imagine him walking into a saloon in Mexico and be like, oh, I want some tequila, I'm going to score 3 goals. He kind of strikes as a kind of figure. But, you know, you look at Modeste, he's taken his opportunities so well. Yeah. He's worked so hard and he's consistently in good form. I know that we players, Ali and Sophie, that we both know, who both rises for Sofa, they both want him.
Yeah. Hashtag Modesta 2018.
Hashtag Modesta 2018. And I totally agree with it. You know, I think that so far he's shown a lot of life. And it's been really interesting to see how strikers have performed, especially in a league that isn't famous for having German number nines. You know, it's interesting to see how other number nines have been playing generally.
Same with Leipzig as well. They've
same
got
with Leipzig.
5 different striking
really,
options.
Really interesting. I think Timo Werner has been a revelation. Yeah. Really needed a change of scenery. He's been brilliant since he moved, obviously, very early days, but really, really impressed. He's, you know, in situations like this where you get excited to see players function in new systems, you know, and on the flip side, surprised that some players are still playing a role. Can't really understand why Haris Seferovic, for example, still plays for Frankfurt. You know, Gacinovic should be wide and Meyer should be up top on his own with Fabian behind. But it's for another day. I just interesting to see how strikers have been performing so far.
So Modeste has 5 goals in 6 games, right?
Ibisevic is 3 off 100.
Wait, let me.
Ibisevic is 3 off 100 in the Bundesliga. Absolutely.
Yeah, so 5 goals in 6 games for Modeste, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what he started in his first 8 games? You know what that was?
He had no goals. Probably.
No, he had 6 goals in 8 games.
Oh, there you go.
And then you know what happened?
He didn't score for ages.
And then he didn't score for 8 games.
Yeah, there you go.
So.
It's
great that Modeste is doing great, and I think
but at the end of the season, he finished with 15 goals.
Yeah, and I mean, a player that goes 8 games without scoring.
Yeah, but a striker who is not a top level striker,
scored 15 goals,
is going to have like that streak. So it's okay. It's worrying, but at the same time, 15 goals.
I'm just saying.
15 goals is what counts.
I'm just saying he's gotten a lot of praise. He's definitely deserved it. He for sure, but. He had the same streak last year.
Yeah, but 15 goals. That's more important for me than 8 games without a goal.
Okay.
Strikers at that level will inevitably have streaks.
Mine's going to be quick. I know that we're basically going really long here. So what I'm going to – basically, I've been watching Mainz a lot this week. I got to see a lot of their games this week. To me, it's sad that their Europa League campaign has basically sucked.
You said it's
every ounce of life out of
such
them.
Such negativity.
Davis, you said it like Donald Trump there. So sad. So sad.
So sad. But they did extremely well playing against Wolfsburg. But Yunus Mali looked. Yes, Yunus Mali looked He looked exhausted.
I think anybody who flies to Azerbaijan to play football in a European competition, apparently, I didn't know that Azerbaijan was in Europe, but
it's sad because this is a trend for a lot of teams that play in the Europa League. But I think it's especially sad this season for Mainz because they lost Christian Heidel as well, and their recruiting has still been actually decent, but then their recruiting basically went out the window because Jose Rodriguez got suspended, and then Gbamin, I think it's pronounced, he was injured. He came back at the weekend. They've been really thin in midfield, and of course Leon Balogun, who's been arguably one of their best players, he's been injured as well. So
they still got a point, though.
I'm really happy for them. Yeah. But it's the reason why I did not think that they were going to finish in towards the top of the table.
Yeah. But that happens a lot.
For me, it's especially depressing because of the summer. Of how much they lost in the summer. They lost their captain. They lost their sporting director. And great for them for making the Europa League and actually coming back after trailing in Azerbaijan.
But all you want for sides like mine, so it's a bit like Augsburg last year, so you just want them to have Liverpool or a game like that. You know, Augsburg had Liverpool last season. Yeah. You just want them to get through the group and have a glamorous
time. I just want you to have Liverpool. I want you to be happy. I want you to go to Liverpool.
For a side like mine or Augsburg, it's the opportunity to be in a really public light. You know, and obviously no one really cares that you're playing away in Azerbaijan.
Exactly. So, that's the other bad part, but they're there
and they've given themselves a chance to get a game against Liverpool or, you know, I don't know who else is
there. They're in a European tournament. I mean, I don't understand. I don't know if you were hitting that point, but I don't understand why teams don't take the Europa League seriously.
Yeah, I know.
The European trophy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, have some respect.
Of course.
You know, and I think I remember.
Only from the quarterfinals.
Yeah. I remember interviewing Christian Heidel, and he said basically like 2 years ago when they signed Jatiokou for the record transfer, he was like, our target is still to avoid relegation. They've still got a long way to go before they've got that to worry
about.
Yeah, and Mainz are not a big club at all. Yeah, they've just been there, they've got consistency, they've got stability.
Made
so
some great decisions.
Yeah, we're not having anyone dissing Mainz. Yeah.
No, I'm not dissing them. I think it's sad because I do like what they're doing. I think
they're going to win 3-0 at the next
Of course. Well, they tried, and they tried really hard in the summer to get themselves ready for their first European competition. But even then, it's just the travel and the injuries.
It's all new to them, you know, and that's just something you've got to remember. It was new to Augsburg. It's something they've got to get used to.
All right, well, let's put a bow on this pod. We obviously got into a lot. We obviously wanted to give you guys a little bit more because the international break is coming up. Germany, of course, playing two games that I don't think anybody cares about.
I'll be there.
So we will have a podcast next week. I think we're going to be revisiting some of our preseason predictions, so stay tuned for that. And for Stefan Biankowski, at Biankowski on Twitter. Jonathan Harding is at JohnBlogs66, 2 G's and 2 6's. And Ross Dunbar, which is RossDunbar93 on Twitter. And I'm at Davis_VanOptrup. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week.